Chapter 8. Talkie. By noon, Makwa couldn't sleep any longer. He rolled over in his bed.
Is it time yet? I know you said we'd sleep a lot today, but trying to sleep any more is like trying to sail up a beach.
His tail lashed about in the covers as though it had a mind of its own. Saruth got out of bed and yawned.
Very well. The sun is high. Get up and we can get started. We can always gather more rest later in preparation for the oncoming night's travel.
Makwa scratched one of his ears.
Ugh, why do we have to travel at night anyway?
Saruth looked toward Makwa's bed as he ran a brush through his mane.
Because Tol'Jaffa is under law to only bring outsiders to the capital city in such a manner. If we travel at night and move in a few circles, it will be more difficult to tell where Wazella is, which protects it from the cultures of other people to an extent.
Makwa considered asking another question, but the answers he was getting at this point made him already wish he hadn't tried to think so soon after getting up. Saruth poured two cups of water and handed him one.
Water in the morning helps you start your day. You'll need it for thought, work, and play. Drink up, Makwa, because today you're going to do a lot of the foremost.
He drew the cup to his lips and drank as his ears perked. He pondered for a moment, and his thinking seemed to become clearer with the hydration, even though he couldn't imagine his brain getting any wetter that fast.
Oh, yeah.
He licked his nose and looked into the cup.
We work on the language thing today. How do you do that, Saruth?
Saruth produced a necklace and held it out for Makwa to see while he poked a claw at a small blue crystal hanging from its golden chain.
This necklace has a crystal on it. The crystal is similar to the one in my staff, except for the fact that it contains only the program needed for language. I concentrate on people, and the crystal concentrates on the words they use. When they speak, the crystal picks up the thoughts behind the words. After this takes place, it sends them to my mind. Because the inmost thoughts transcend wording, I can understand people even if the process sometimes takes a moment to complete. My ability to speak their language is a bit more complicated. I use the crystal's knowledge of how their language works for me to naturally get the right words to respond, and how to use my mouth to say them. In essence, the more I listen to them, the better I am at their language.
Makwa put a hand to his face and groaned.
So you're telling me there's no secret to it other than a luck charm that thinks?
Saruth chuckled.
Hardly. I made the necklace myself.
He held up a finger and narrowed his eyes, locking his gaze with that of Makwa.
I had to sing to this crystal for hours to get the right program in it. And there is a considerable amount of scientific knowledge involved, including the synthetic mind programming for the crystal, how to attune the program to a specific crystal, known templates for such activities, biological knowledge necessary to identify the right portion of the brain involved in the connections, and a keen understanding of the organization of the specific mind that is the primary user of the device, including an estimation of variances for several presumed states of mind with which the program must interact, so that a change in the user's mood doesn't render the device inoperable.
Makwa stared with wide eyes. He tried to think of something to say, even as his mind muddled through all the explaining and his eyes lowered as he looked into the middle distance with the effort of the task. For once, he wasn't sure he wanted to ask another question. Still, he opened his mouth to try and looked up, but stopped at what he saw. Saruth began pacing back and forth beside the bed and kept tempo to his words with a swaying fingertip, like a lecturer.
On top of all this, a small portion of acceleration must be set up as a portion of the program's flexibility for user comfort, and the means to siphon sufficient energy from the user to power the device without disabling the user or causing side effects, like headaches, is also needed.
He blinked and waved a hand as if dismissing an insect from his shoulder.
Unless one wants to meditate on it for a while each day, at any rate.
He blinked, stopped, and then lifted his finger again.
In addition, the program interacts not with one specific mind, but with one keyed mind on one side and several different minds on the other. The device mitigates both needless time and risk. I could, for example, use song to understand Tol'Jaffa, but it is noisy and somewhat more dangerous. I could pick up information from a portion of his brain that didn't involve speech if I were careless, and then nothing would come out right.
Makwa stared at the man, and didn't know if he felt worry or respect for this feat of what seemed like madness. That word salad made his brain hurt, and while he was sure that Saruth was speaking Barumish Mercantile, he wasn't sure what all that meant.
So, it's complicated.
like sailing a ship in a storm while putting together an inverted squirming puzzle written in math while dancing and surrounded by merrymakers at a festival. Yes, as ever when dealing with the mind, nothing is simple, Makwa.
Saruth glanced down at him and twirled the necklace off of a fingertip. He peered at the necklace and narrowed his golden eyes as his tail flicked behind him. A thought came.
So you could read someone's mind with that thing?
Saruth shook his head and caught the necklace in his palm at the end of its spin.
No, because that isn't part of the program. Every now and again a strong feeling or desire in a person I'm talking to surfaces, and I can sense it even though the crystal isn't meant to give me anything but what they would say to me.
He rubbed his chin and a light-hearted smirk appeared on his face.
There have been times someone wanted to say something to me enough to think it in a very powerful way. At such times I've heard the words without them being spoken aloud. It's a side effect of being very attuned to the device, and very sensitive to the minds of others in general.
Magua's mouth opened with a question on his tongue. A moment later his eyes widened, and his mouth stayed open as he considered all the times he'd wished Saruth would just shut up in those long hours on the cart. The man laughed and lifted a brow.
You're netting the fish, as they say in Barumith City.
Makwa's ears warmed on the insides, the heat filling them as he considered all the rude thoughts he'd had toward his benefactor. Saruth waved a hand as if to dismiss the issue.
You couldn't have known, Makwa. Besides, would it have been fair for me to punish you for thoughts alone?
He waved a hand.
Even if you had said all those things, I'd have forgiven you. You possessed the maturity not to give voice to them, and I admire that in someone your age. You could always ask me for some quiet time if you needed it,
Unable to think of a single thing to say, Makwa just sat there. He closed his mouth and rubbed his nose with the back of a hand. In a moment he cocked an ear at Saruth.
You have another one of those necklaces? What do you call them, anyway?
Saruth shook his head and dropped the necklace from his palm to hang under spread fingers.
No, but we can make you one. It's called a talking thought shard. Some people in my homeland call them talkies. Most of us carry one when we're going out into the world at large.
Makwa gazed at the tiny sapphire that hung from the golden chain.
How do we make something like that?
Saruth smiled.
Dress, and I shall show you. We can't go with you wearing only your undergarment, can we? Be ready to walk, because we have to find a jewelry merchant.
Makwa and Saruth walked into a small store on the outskirts of town. Like most shops Makwa had seen, this one consisted of a front door that opened to a large counter. Behind the counter sat the merchant, and behind him on display were all his goods. The customer had to tell the merchant what he was looking for, and then the merchant would find the item and offer a price. Such was the arrangement of almost all shops in Barumith City, except fish and vegetable markets or those selling animals. The merchant spread his hands.
"Welcome, travelers. What are you searching for today?"
Saruth stepped forward.
A crystal.
The sly-looking old man with brown fur shifted his spectacles on his nose, narrowed his green eyes, nodded, and then went rummaging behind the counter.
Let me see what I can find.
Makwa looked around the establishment. It was full of exotic things like hides, tusks, and the bones of animals mounted on walls. There were rugs, ornate cookware, beautiful weaponry arrayed in stands, and various vials, jars and jugs full of many strange potions, incenses, and spices. A shuffling sound of stone shifting in a box brought Makwa's attention to the present. A large wooden tray of gems and rocks was placed on the counter before him. He frowned a little as he looked, wondering how to choose. Saruth placed a hand on his shoulder.
Now, Makwa, don't pick the gem for its appearance alone. Pick the one that seems easiest to find with your eyes closed. When you think you've found the one you want, hold it in your hand and think on it. After you're sure it's the one, hand it to me and let me examine it.
The shopkeeper looked at Saruth, his ears laid back.
Are you some kind of wizard? I would hope that you wouldn't let the boy touch too many.
Saruth smirked as Makwa met his gaze in that moment. He tossed Makwa a wink before he looked up at the shopkeeper.
Sir, if I were a wizard, I might turn you into a scrackle. Seeing as I'm not, however, I'll just mention promptly that if you want my coin, you'll let the boy touch as many of the gems as he pleases. Makwa is no thief.
Makwa blinked at Saruth, who smiled back at him.
Yes, traveler.
The merchant nodded with a sour expression he was quick to banish. Makwa turned back to the tray and set about picking his gem while Saruth had the merchant get him a few other things. He spotted a small emerald that was beautiful, but when he closed his eyes, he couldn't find it in the tray. He noticed another gem, this one a large ruby, and when he closed his eyes and searched, he opened them to find it somehow in his grasp. It was as if his thoughts had drawn his hand to it. He held it as he thought about it and closed his eyes for a moment. He felt a frown move over his face. Something about it wasn't right. The shape was too harsh for him, and the edges were unnatural in a way that both mattered and was inexplicable. He gazed at it again and then put it back. The merchant also frowned.
"That gem is of fine quality, boy. Why not choose it?"
Sir Ruth leaned closer and whispered into his ear.
"Take your time. The crystal must be something that matches your touch, Makwa."
He nodded and continued, focusing on his task while his tail flicked. After a few more that just didn't seem right, he found a cylindrical piece of amethyst with a natural point at the end. His hand found it almost right away when he concentrated on it with closed eyes. When he held it and thought about it, it just seemed right. It was as if his mind flowed around the translucent purple stone and reached into it to find a moment of tranquility inside.
Makwa?
Makwa looked up at Saruth and saw a bemused curiosity on his face. He wetted his nose with his tongue.
What?
Makwa, you've been standing there holding it for 10 minutes without a word. Is that the one?
Makwa swallowed, nodded, and offered it to Saruth. He held it up in the light of the window and looked at it with an almost silent purr. He closed his eyes.
Oh, Makwa.
The man gave a soft sigh.
This one is an excellent choice. Well done.
Sir, there are many others worth a great deal more than that one. It is only a lesser—
Saruth waved a hand and interrupted.
Makwa's decision is final. If you will cease complaints about it, I'll be happy to purchase a chain for it as well.
In about an hour, the shopkeeper, who was also a jeweler, had completed affixing the crystal to a silver loop that was attached to hang from a thick silver jewelry chain. It was a far cry from Saruth's golden sapphire necklace, but Makwa loved it at first sight. He'd picked the chain, too, and the final product was very fitting. Saruth paid the merchant a little extra for his efforts, and then they gathered their goods and stepped out into the street.
Now comes the difficult part. I must program the crystal for you. And to do it, I must have you present and have peace and relative quiet for a few hours. I could imprint it to my mind and program it to allow anyone to use it, but it would be better if it was made attuned to you.
Makwa nodded and pointed down the street.
This way. There's a little dam at the end of one of these streets that splits the canal to the sea from the swamplands. The only sound there is water.
Saruth perked his ears and smiled.
That would be excellent. I'll begin thinking about what I must do while you leave me there.
Makwa nodded. As the two walked in silence, he had time to reflect on what had happened since he'd chosen to jump on the cart with Saruth and leave his past behind. It was clear to him that during the many miles of roadway traveled, he had learned a lot about life. He had changed, but he didn't understand all the changes. He realized that he could make something of himself now, and that this benevolent prophet would do all within his strange power to assure that. Makwa's journey had only begun, he knew, and tomorrow it would be time to see what lay ahead beyond Sebastian's path.